At Exact Sciences, we're on a mission to outsmart cancer. Through our growing portfolio of genomic tests, we are helping to enable more informed, intelligent, and individualized oncology decisions. Insights from the Oncotype DX Breast Recurrence Score Test, the OncoExTra Test, and more are changing how cancer is treated for more than 1.5 million patients. See how we're enabling the next era of personalized cancer care at precisiononcology.exactsciences.com.
If you've never been to the Maryland Renaissance Festival, you don't know what you're missing. There's so much to see and do. It's like a 16th century theme park with shops and pubs, food and games, live jousting, crafts and music, 10 stages with nonstop entertainment. Fun for the whole family. Saturdays, Sundays, and Labor Day Monday through October 20th. Tickets online only at MarylandRenaissanceFestival.com. Save big on admission through September 8th. Near Annapolis, the Maryland Renaissance Festival. Time travel to fun.
Hello, everybody, and this is Stacey Chalemi from The Advisor. Today, I'm very excited because we have a very, very special guest today. We have Rich Cruz, and he is an organizational developmental consultant, and he is one of the owners for Harmonious Workplace, and his motto is make change your friend, and he's going to show you how to make change your friend, and he's going to explain to you exactly what he means and how that could actually benefit your life in so many areas of your life. So Rich, it is an honor to have you on the show. I am so happy that you're here today. Tell everybody a little about yourself and what you do.
Oh, sure. Oh, thanks, Stacey. This is just a treat to be here. Thank you so much. Where I am now, I'm an organizational development consultant, right? So I work with businesses to help them to succeed with the people that they have there, right? Because it's the people from a human capital perspective, you know, they are the ones who deliver value to organizations, right? And if you have like the Gallup global workplace polls, right, that they put out every year, only 23% of employees are actually actively engaged at work, right? So we've got this problem that's it's an age-old problem, but it's especially something that has come to the forefront of today's culture. So that's what we set out to do, is to kind of help companies to address, well, first of all, face up to what's happening, right? So bring that up and actually show the from a scientific kind of background, right? For using analysis to show them from the data, this is what's actually happening, and then use some of the principles that evidence has shown, some research has shown, to help them through this, right? And navigate some organizational and cultural changes to bring about better business.
I feel like it's really hard for, you know, today's society. Like we were talking right before the show, the number one thing you hear in businesses is that, you know, employees are, you know, feel fearful of their bosses. The bosses are, you know, they're supposed to be mentors, and some of them come off, you know, because of the way they've done their businesses all their life, they come off more the boss than they do a mentor. And then, you know, you have miscommunication going on. And it's so, you know, and then bosses will explain that, you know, it's very hard to keep good employees and it's very hard to find good employees. So there's a lot of different things going on, you know, in these workplaces. But what are some of the common problems that you find when you speak to different organizations and companies and businesses? You know, what are some of the most common problems and maybe some of the solutions that are simple solutions that you could kind of breeze over today?
Yeah, for sure. And that's exactly it. It's just going to be a breeze over. We're not going to solve problems here, right? But the reality is, so I've been to several different events for different industries. So I belong to different industry groups. Specifically was at a manufacturing operations roundtable event. And we've had several people within this association that were talking about, we have an older group of workers who have all the knowledge, skills, abilities, and other characteristics that are driving business right now, right? So KSAOs, knowledge, skills, abilities, and other characteristics, right? They hold all of this, but they are ready to retire, and they are really like counting down the days, right? There's a ton of institutional knowledge here that they are risking losing, right? And then you have this group of new talent coming in, right? First of all, it's hard to attract that talent coming in because there's other opportunities. And so you really have to make sure that you have a solid culture and a good reputation, right?
Yeah.
Things like Glassdoor and Indeed can like damage a company's reputation and people just gloss over them and say, I'm not even going to bother applying, right? But then there's other aspects, right, from a branding standpoint that culture really plays into. And so even when they bring in this new talent, the new talent isn't necessarily engaged, right? And they feel like they are, they don't feel welcome. They don't feel necessarily safe, right? And they're like, oh, I'm going to learn this. And then what are they going to forget about me, right? You know, so there's a lot of that going on. And what I see on this is you have some really great opportunities within, and it's not just me. So I Harmonious Workplaces, it's me. It's Cheryl Volpe, who is, she's my associate from, we both graduated from Purdue last year with degrees in IO psychology, industrial organizational psychology, and Ben Kleinman. And Ben is a Chicago change management professional. And mm-hmm. so, you know, what we see here is you have this generation that should be at a stage in their life. So if there's a model, Erickson's model of development that says when you're at, you know, this age of, was it between 40 and 65 or somewhere about that? Don't quote me on that age group exactly, but around there we have generativity versus stagnation. So generativity is where we want to pass down this information. It's like we're wired for that culturally throughout the ages. You have the elders passing down the generation. Not to say that we're old. What I'm saying is that, you know, we're wired to want to do that. And yet we have right now Gen Xers and baby boomers who are holding on to that with fear of them losing their position, losing their job, losing whatever power they might have, right? Yeah. Particularly as they are coming towards retirement age, because they want to keep their benefits and you know, full retirement plans and all that stuff, right? And then you have this other group, right? The Gen Zs and the millennials who are in the stage of life where they are looking for intimacy versus isolation, right? So they're looking for their tribe, right? Yes. They're looking for the in-groups, the people that, and the places that they can call home.
Right.
But when you have this where I don't want to share, you know, and we're thirsty for knowledge and we really want to get to work, right? And we have, you know, some of the stereotypes out there are, oh, the Gen Zs and millennials, they don't want to work or they don't want to do that. And that's not the case, you know.
Right.
I teach as an adjunct over here at Trinity Christian College. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, we want to learn. We're hungry to get in the workforce and we really want to do this. But we also need to feel like we're supported, right?
Yeah.
So perceived organizational support is very, very important. And we as consultants, we come in and we really try to help, you know, bridge that because and use some of the data collected from interviews and all that, you know, to help businesses to understand that and help them to navigate some of the cultural changes that they need to be making to make a more of a learning culture. You know, so that's really, you know, a driving force for us.
Have you seen, is it hard for a lot of people who are in charge to change their way of doing things? Because I find that it seems like a lot of times, you know, they're stuck in the way of doing things that, because they've been so consistent for over a decade, you know, doing things a certain way, that a lot of people, a lot of older people, you know, don't realize, or they might realize that the world is changing, but they don't realize within their own, you know, business, you know, or their own company, how different things need to be done. Because
right.
what worked even a couple of years ago before COVID, you know, is completely different now.
Completely different. Absolutely. Yeah. So there's a lot of resistance that happens with change. And actually it's interesting. There are some, I was in a group not too long ago of organizational development professionals that said, you know, change resistance is a myth. I'm still like, oh, really? I want to learn more. But I don't know the answer to that one. What I have seen is that, you have people with that do have, you know, resistance to change. There are some different models here, you know, from a research perspective, where people, you know, in that beginning part of state of change, right, which is the ending of the status quo, it's the ending of what is there and letting go of maybe something that the owner built or something that, you know, it feels like a warm blanket for us to do this process, right? You know, and so when we say, oh, we're going to change that because that's no longer working for us right now, or maybe even we're going to modify that. So it's still a change and we're not getting rid of it completely, but we're modifying this process or whatever. They have some concerns, right? And that could be fear. That can be, honestly, anger. You know, there's lots of different emotions that come with that. And it's literally, you know, there are stages of guilt there's some guilt in there too, but of grief, right, that come out of this because people are literally letting go of something that is no longer going to be there anymore. And then they move into this kind of neutral zone where, you know, they feel regret. Like they're like, oh, what did I do? Like I'm going through this and can we go back? And you see some of that backslide that happens, right? And this is where we need to be able to have some buy-in from above, right? For sure. But we also need to garner support throughout the rest of the organization because we need to be social when it comes to these changes. We all need to participate and support each other, right? And it's when we have that type of thing happening that we have successful change. And part of that is having a feedback loop that allows people to express how they feel, what's going on with them, and listen to their ideas and make decisions based on that, where they're involved in those processes. Because when we don't do that, they're confused. They've got questions. They're fearful. They don't want to move into that. But if we do this where we allow that, then they start moving into the new beginning. They're making gains. Acceptance starts to come through. We have, adoption, and the whole idea here is, you know, can we get the late adopters and the laggards, you know, at the end of the change to really fully embrace this and move into what could and should be part of the organizational culture.
I think it's so important to be able to have that feedback. A lot of people have a hard time with constructive criticism and you really have to be open-minded and listen to other people's feedback because, you know, that's what really helps build, you know, a good business. Because a lot of times, you know, we might not see things, you know, the way other people see things. And I think that's a huge thing, you know,
what we
like and what we think is good may not be good to a lot of people's eyes, you know, and it's our job, I think, to try to be open-minded and to accept that constructive feedback. And a lot of people have a hard time, you know, because, you know, especially people who are fearful of change, they, you know, take a lot of people take, you know, constructive criticism as a strike against them, you know, and they get defensive. So, you know, is there a specific way that people can give feedback so you avoid that conflict, or you don't offend them? Because you see that a lot, like, you know.
So I have a mentor, Alan Landers, Landers Consulting Group. He's the trainer for the Drucker School of Management, where I received my certification in OD, Organizational Development and Change Leadership. And Alan is famous for saying that change leaders need to wear their tomato suit. Now, what I mean by that is in vaudeville, right? If you were a comedian or a juggler or whatever, you'd get up there, right? And you had to be resilient. And you weren't wearing your Sunday best on stage because you might get pelted with some tomatoes, right? So he said, you've got to do that. So it's tough. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, it can be really tough for a change leader, and that change leader doesn't necessarily have to be like an executive. Like it can be somebody in the middle, in middle management or a line worker, right? But they have to have some resilience, right? And come in with the ability to take the blows, right? The verbal assaults that may happen, right? Not take it personally. I do listen to like Mel Robbins, and she sometimes has this, where you put your hand on your heart and you take some breaths and you say, I'm safe, I'm loved, right? I'm okay, right? So having those moments of taking a breath, taking that feedback, taking a breath, and taking the ego out of it, right? Is very important. There's another author that I read, Ryan Holiday, who writes about the Stoics. So he has a series on Stoicism, but he has one that's called "Ego is the Enemy," right? And I think that's so important to there's a lot of lessons throughout history of different leaders who have, well, he illustrates both things, right? The ones who have egos, right? And the results of that. And then the ones who let go of that and really, they're able to lead by example. And people want to follow them because they have, they're showing that some vulnerability, and they're also shown a receptiveness to how people feel, so that empathy is a big thing, I think.
Oh yeah, I definitely think so. And you mentioned something that, ego, that's a huge thing that a lot of people have this ego on their shoulder, and they don't know how to let go of that ego, and that could destroy, a business in itself. When you have such a big ego, you don't see the flaws within you. You only see the flaws, around everybody else, and you don't, accept change very well, and you want everything done your way, and you only see the greatness in yourself, and you're not
Sure.
seeing others. So what's the best way of ha having someone to acknowledge that they have an ego, and having that person learn how to drop that ego a few notches so they can be on the same level as everyone else?
Is this a 3-hour long podcast
You could bring
or boy, that's a big one, right? I mean, it's that that's a tough scenario, right? Again, if you can leverage some data, right? And when I talk about data, I don't just mean numbers, right? I mean, so there's qualitative data and there's quantitative data. So when you can have those interviews with, line workers, middle managers, and get some of that feedback. And one of the hard parts about a consultant coming in and asking some of those is that we don't want to provide leading questions either. Like, oh, tell me how bad your boss is. That doesn't work, right? But there are some instruments that allow us to assess how people are feeling, and we can kind of gauge, does this mean that, do they have trust in that leadership? Do they see that people have an overinflated ego, like, for lack of a better word, I don't like to use that one, but you know, and then when we can point out that, hey, maybe we need to think about this, you know, again, we have to wear a tomato soup because that's not well received oftentimes, right? Yeah. But we can work through that, right? And it may not be like, I am in no way, shape, or form a therapist or a counselor or, you know, a trained professional on that front. So that could be something that they could work with, but I can coach and help them to, you know, answer some of the questions themselves, right? So if you ask some clarifying questions, it may be able to help them to identify with, you know, with what that is, and maybe not, you know, it depends, you know, that's the old industrial organizational psychology motto is, it depends.
Yeah. When you are working with a group of people and you're consulting them and you're helping them try to, you know, grasp everybody, to understand everybody and to learn how to communicate well with one another, so you have a productive business going on, mm-hmm. is it, do you find that, you know, change is difficult for many people? You know, it's an easy word to say, but for many people, it's very scary. It's very hard. And people not always adapt to change very well. You sure. know, are there some suggestions that you would like to share that you feel, you know, that would help people when it comes to change? Because I'm sure you go into different work environments, and when you start talking about different ways of doing things, you know, you'll have the people who are really, you know, looking at you, observing and absorbing everything you say. And then you have people that are fiddling with their fingers because they're nervous and, you know, change is not their forte, you know? So, you know, what are some suggestions about change, you know, because change is a very scary word and it's very hard for some.
Yeah. That's a great question. I actually kind of think that you have to think like a marketer in some ways, right? You have to know your audience. There's going to be different personas of people that are on your staff. So understanding who your audience is, how they communicate, maybe what their communication styles are, right? Yeah. Based on, you know, how they work, maybe even some assessments that can help with that. Yeah. It allows you to craft a message. I mean, ultimately, mm-hmm. people need to know what's in it for them.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, really, ultimately, is it going to benefit me? Is it going to hurt me? Is it neither of those, you know? So there is some, you know, being able to address that part of it that I think is very, very important.
If you've never been to the Maryland Renaissance Festival, you don't know what you're missing. There's so much to see and do. It's like a 16th century theme park with shops and pubs, food and games, live jousting, crafts and music, 10 stages with nonstop entertainment. Fun for the whole family. Saturdays, Sundays, and Labor Day Monday through October 20th. Tickets online only at MarylandRenaissanceFestival.com. Save big on admission through September 8th. Near Annapolis, the Maryland Renaissance Festival. Time travel to fun.
And then the different types of styles of communication that we use, whether it's channels, you know, is it emails, is it one-to-one meetings, is it group meetings, you know, is it a phone call, is it a one-to-one, you know, there's different levels of richness that we get when we're talking with people, you know, so a group in-person meeting is going to have a different vibe and flavor for people, and they're going to resonate worse or better than maybe if you have a one-on-one on Zoom or on a phone call or something like that, right? So you have to be able to kind of meet them where they're at to some extent, I yeah. think, you know, and again, if you can explain the vision. So John Cotter, who wrote the book Leading Change, 1996, I think. Mm-hmm. So I read it back in 2003 or 2004 when I got my MBA. And it still sticks with me because we're dealing with this, the same stuff, and it and the 8-stage framework still works, where he talks about, you know, create a vision, right? We need a vision. We need a, then we need a coalition of support, you know, that that guide that vision. You know, so I think that we need to be very, very crystal clear on this is what we're doing and this is why we're doing it. So that that whole Simon Sinek start with why is also a very important part of all this.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I think people have to understand the why, you know, why are we doing this, the importance of it, you know, and you know, I always believe failure, you don't, if you try, there is no such thing as failure. You may not reach the goal that you intended, but you gave it the effort that, you know, and as long as you give effort and you try to achieve that goal, you know, just the trying part, you know, shows that I don't believe that it's failure. You just may not have reached that ultimate goal that you were setting for, but you just keep trying and keep trying. And I think the more we try, the better we get and the further we'll advance to.
Yeah, I love that. You said that in the January podcast about goal setting. And that's right. You're spot on. You know, I when I heard that, I'm like, write that down. So, very good. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I think it's so important, you know, it's for people to learn how to change, because so many people can get so stressed in the workforce. And when you're so stressed, that's when so many things start to occur. You know, people get stressed, they get irritable, they can't communicate with the other people they're working with, they might snip at the other people, you know, and it's very hard to work like with harmonious balance, you know.
That's right.
If you are in a setting where people are stressed and they are not, you know, everybody is under the pressure, under the gun, and because the communication might not be, you know, really, you know, 100%, because they're not making the changes they're supposed to, which could lead back to the communication or whatever the problem may stem from, you know, that ability to be able to, you know, understand what is the root cause of that stress in that environment, and then making those changes to overcome those stresses, you know, just making a list of what we can do and how to do them, which is something I'm sure you do with as a consultant, can really, you know, help a business, you know, go from just surviving to thriving.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And I think what's really helpful is, you know, there's not just like one framework that you can use. There are different frameworks, but no matter what, I think if you can use some kind of a framework and work, you know, work through that, because there's evidence that supports that this framework has worked for others in the past, right? And so I think that that's one thing that organizations, you know, if they try to do this on their own, without, because there are internal consultants that can do this type of stuff too. You know, if they know they have the skills, you know, your human right. resources department often has people who are trained in this type of thing too. You know, project managers have some training in that as well. But so when I talk about consultant, like it can be an internal or an external, you know, person or group of people. But I think if you work within some kind of a system or framework, you're going to have much more success than trying to, you know, fly by the seat of your pants, you know, don't let the data talk and just go, hey, I'm just, you know, I think we should do this. You know, I think we could be much smarter about how we make decisions by leveraging those frameworks, leveraging some of the you know, past research, but also the institutional knowledge that we have. Like, you know, ask those people that are around you, you know, what do you think? How do you think we should move forward?
Right. If you had to like simplify some of the steps people need to take to have harmonious balances in their workforce, What are some of the things that you would like to share that, you know, is really important things in the workforce that needs to be established in order to have that harmonious balance? Again, you can go, you don't need to give a detailed 3-hour answer. You could just.
I'll try to be brief. The first one, I think, is make change your friend. You know, we say we end our podcast at the Harmonious Workplaces podcast with make change your friend. So I think that's one thing. The second thing is keep moving forward. That has stuck with me ever since I watched Meet the Robinsons with my kids. That was, yeah, I think that was, I don't know, 2007 or 8 or something like that, you know, but I think that that is super important to don't give up, keep moving forward. And the other thing is, you know, leveraging communication, right? Knowing your audience, tailoring your communication channels and your style to your audience. And the last part, which is what I kind of wrote my capstone on at Purdue, was training and development. You know, so having a learning culture. You know, I'm going to go back to when we first started this. You know, when you have, you know, the people who are holding all the knowledge right now, right, and they're afraid to share it. If you can do like a train the trainer program, or and then you're providing training on this end, so you're training everybody, and they're. And it's not just like training for training's sake, but it's actually helping people to grow when they're actually like, when they have a new skill that they can put into place and you can reinforce that skill with on the job training, coaching, rewards, right? That type of stuff, which is, again, evidence-based, the Kirkpatrick new model of training, you know, supports that, right? I think that learning culture is going to give people that growth mindset that we've read about and keep them wanting to continue to make new goals, new you know, reach new challenges and keep the flywheel going. You know, so
did that help? Oh yeah, no, that helped. Yeah,
great. Definitely.
I think it's really important that, you know, that companies really bring in coaches and bring in consultants and bring people to really show people different ways of approaching situations and different ways of making change your friend, you know, and because if you have a company that is just either just plateauing, or if you have a company that's just, you know, just surviving, or even a company that is doing well but has a lot of stress going on, you know, having a coach and having consultants come in and really showing people a different way of approaching things and different ways of really doing things in a more constructive way that would actually ease their life instead of making it as complicated as it may be at that moment, mm-hmm. I think really, really help many, many companies and businesses in our United States.
For sure. Absolutely. I agree. I'm glad we see eye to eye on that. now let's make more people. Perfect. Yeah.
Now, if you had to take today's situation, like that we talked about, all the conversation that we had, what are some important aspects that you really like to focus on, that you'd really like to emphasize on for the listeners, that you think are important aspects that they really need to really understand when it comes to harmonious balance and when it comes to making change your friend and why it's so important? You know, that was like the main thing that we were talking about today. What are some things you'd like to emphasize on?
I think one of the things I want to emphasize is taking a look at your corporate culture, and along with that, working within some frameworks, right? Because I think there are some really great corporate culture systems that are out there. I am not an EOS practitioner, but I'm going to use that as a reference, because that entrepreneurial operating system, which is developed by Mark Winters from his book Rocket Fuel, and Gino Wickman, sorry. So their book, Rocket Fuel and Traction, it provides a system for business owners to include their teams, set goals based on strategies, right? So I think working within a system and developing a culture that fosters open communication, fosters learning, and has psychological safety. So just a little, can I give a shameless plug for a second?
Yes. Yes.
All right, cool. All right. So if you go to our website, so we have harmoniousworkplaces.com, but that is a subsidiary of Work Balance Consulting. So if you go to workbalanceconsulting.com, you will find a culture scorecard. So you can go there, fill out the scorecards very quick. You'll get an email response with kind of a decoder ring, I guess you could call it, you know, but it'll tell you, you know, based on your score, here's where we think you're at. And we're happy to have a discussion about, you know, what those results are. We also have a white paper that my partner Cheryl wrote, which is on psychological safety, that you'll find out there on our website. And again, that's workbalanceconsulting.com. There you go. You can also go to our website at, so we have a blog and a podcast at harmoniousworkplaces.com, where, you know, we put out pretty much weekly, or maybe more than that now, blogs. And then we do a weekly podcast on largely organizational culture, organizational change management, and organizational development.
I think that's amazing. Now, what are, you know, you talked about some of the things that you have on your website. Like, what are some of the services that you provide for others?
Yeah. So we come in with, we start with assessing, right? Then we come in and we have an amend step there, which is developing the plan for how do we move from, you know, what we're assessing and analyzing, right, to that amend part. And then we have an execution stage, right? And that execution stage is where we're helping to implement those changes and foster that through. But we really, really, you know, I can't stress this enough, we need to rely on the organization to, yes, you know, carry this through, right? Because our ultimate goal is, we'll help you get the flywheel going. We're here for support, but this is your culture, and that's going to, you know, whether people come in or out of the organization,
yes,
you're going to be able to maintain that. That's our goal, to systemize it, have people feel like they want to work there, have people feel like they're part of an engaged and harmonious workplace, right?
Right. No, it's so important, you know, because you really need that harmonious workplace environment if you're going to thrive, if you're going to do well, if you're going to have happy employees that are going to want to give you 300% and not like constantly look at the time clock and just want to get out of there because they just don't feel in a good place of mind. They feel stressed, they feel overworked, they feel like they're not valued, and all this other stuff that, you know, that they won't come out and tell the bosses, but they'll talk to their coworkers, and then, you know, the messages eventually get to the top, if they get to the top. A lot of times they don't get to the top,
that's true.
And you don't want to wait till it's too late and you start losing those great employees that were really, you know, valued and really did a lot for the company. So it's really important to, you know, have that assessment. But I, you know, what you said is so important. You can give all the advice, you can give the structures, you can give them the framework, but it's up to the business to implement it and to do it on a daily basis. You know,
right.
Some people will do it for the first couple of months and then they go back into their old routines. You have to make these new ways of doing things, these new changes, part of your work life, you know, and it just has to become the natural new routine, you know, yep, that change, you know, that, and it's a change, but now it's a normal routine that you just, right, can continue to implement on a daily basis.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, we can, you know, as consultants, we can come in, we can help to evaluate. And so there's Edgar Schein's model of culture, which is a three-step model. Sometimes it's like a pyramid, sometimes it's a iceberg. Right. Underneath you have assumptions, right? So we can help to identify, you know, those assumptions and that part of the corporate culture and really, you know, define and then figure out what needs to change in here. There's the values, which should be guiding how, you know, from soup to nuts, how the organization operates, right? So there's that values part there. And then there's the artifacts part. That's the behaviors and the outward signs that everybody sees. And that's a component that once you need to get the assumptions and the values aligned to make that part where it's the visible part of this is how we do things, you know, and this is how these are the values that we espouse, right? And here's how we show it. And it's through how we handle customer service, how we manage quality, how we do, you know, any of those, you know, business related things that we do, you know, in sales, operations, marketing, all of that, you know, it's all going to stem from that. But that's, you know, we kind of come in and help to do that type of stuff, you know, and it could be on a micro level. We just need to do these little changes, or it can be on a macro level, you know. So it's not, everything's not a, as my friend Ben says, it's not always a tire fire, you know, that we're trying to extinguish, but you know, can we help with the tire fire? Sure. But you know, we're hoping that it's more of a smoldering flame that we can you know, help to control.
And it's funny because I've seen, you know, before we go, I've seen many companies just have small little tweaks that need to be made. And once those tweaks were made in their structure of their business, they just start to thrive. Yeah. And it was just, you know, they just needed a small couple little tweaks here and there that they were lacking. And they needed to see where they were and they needed to learn how to fix it. And as soon as that was done, it was like a whole new business. It just took off. And it was just by changing a few little aspects in the business. And that's, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. Does not have to be a completely transformative experience. It can be. Sometimes it's needed. But it doesn't have to be, you know. Exactly. Don't freak out. Again, make change your friend.
Well, I got to tell you, this has been great. Before we go, is there anything else that you'd like to share? Anything that you comes to mind that you'd like to get across?
The only thing I can think of is, first of all, thank you. This was just a treat and a pleasure to be here. And, you know, if I could just say again, harmoniousworkplaces.com, tune into us, we'll steer you over to the culture scorecard and the white paper.
I love it. This has been amazing, Rich. I thank you so much for coming on this show. This is such a great topic to talk about. And it's such an important topic because so many businesses need it. And it could be, you know, with the right structure, with the right guidance, it, you know, it changes could just, you know, people could just flourish. Their businesses can flourish. And in today's economy, that's what we need. We need businesses that are flourishing. And, you know, small to medium size to large corporations, we need them all to flourish. So people like you make a huge difference in today's business, you know, industry. So I'd like to thank you so much for coming on the show and just talking about a small aspect that means so much to every business. Thank you.
Yeah. I just one quick thing, cause you hit the nail on the head there, Stacey, there's two parts to why we're doing this type of work, right? One is I was a business owner and an employer, right? So I know the importance of that. I know the importance also of having a thriving economy based on small business, small, medium, even large, but right. Mm-hmm. But I think that's super huge. And the second thing is that I have seen what it does to people when they don't have a good career, right? Yeah. And we want to make more harmonious workplaces so that people have good careers. They're paid well. They can achieve their dreams. They're doing what they're doing what they're themselves, their families, they're achieving their goals, right? Because when you have the business owners that are doing well and you have the employees that are doing well, again, you've got harmonious workplaces and subsequently communities that are thriving and we're doing well, where everybody's lifting everybody else up.
Yes. And that's so important. That's so important. Well, Rich, this has been amazing. I'd like to thank you once again. I thank you already about 5 times, but I'm going to thank you once again.
Thank you.
This has been great. I really appreciate you. I appreciate what you're doing. And I thank you so much for coming on the show to explain this and to explain, you know, about change and some of the strategies that go behind it and how it doesn't have to be so strenuous, you know, that with little change, you know, and just in taking baby steps, huge changes can come about.
Absolutely. Well, awesome. Thanks so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. And you have a great day.
You too. Take care.
Every day, we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you are ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
A coach who knows the game can teach their team how to improve. But one who genuinely cares about each player,
you have what it takes. We got this.
Can inspire them to win. At Truist, we believe the same is true for banking. Because when you work with someone who knows a lot and cares even more, you're unstoppable. Truist, leaders in banking, unwavering in care. Start feeling unstoppable. Visit truist.com/care. Truist Bank, member FDIC, leading based on top 10 U.S. commercial bank.